Someone's calling us. Okay, well, welcome to the August edition of the Blue Waters user call. And I'd like to welcome everyone back from their summer vacation, if that's over, or back on the system now that we're in friendly user mode. So we have a full house here in our conference room here, Blue Waters, NCSA. I'd like to get started. And is that out of the way? Maybe not. Okay, I can't do that. All right. Well, first I'd like to thank everyone who participated in the Extreme Scaling workshop out at the Exceed and Blue Waters co-sponsored workshop that took place out in Boulder last week. We had four groups giving presentations with who are on Blue Waters and also on other resources. And there was a couple of people from industry present as well. There were some good presentations, I think, and some good things to be understood about how people are using these large systems and how people plan to continue using these large systems as they continue to grow and increase in complexity. And as part of the advertising, just like to look suggest that some of the groups that are doing work on Blue Waters, if you are interested, take a look at the workshop. I don't think there's information regarding the next year's workshop on there yet, but I'm sure the announcements will come out in a couple months. So if you're interested in learning more about what's going on, at least within the NSF viewpoint and maybe some of the other national labs that's going on with the movement towards larger and larger systems, we encourage you to participate. And I'd also like to thank the different groups for their input and preparation for our NSF review that we had back in, I think, June? I can't remember.
July.
It's been a crazy summer here, so we'd like to thank everyone who helped out with last-minute requests for information on publications and presentations, and especially the contributions from some of the teams that we asked to give some presentations of their NSF-squared work. So we think that went very well, and the panel gave us some positive input and some good feedback that we're taking a look at now and starting to prepare and decide how to implement. Bill, do you have any comments you want to say?
No, I think it was the first meeting where the panel actually looked at how we have been doing and the usage of the machine and what it's being used for, as well as starting to roll out science accomplishments. So they were very interested in what is being done by you all on the machine and how things are progressing. I think that'll be a continued theme for our panels there. We'll come back to a couple items later, I think, that relate directly to some of the suggestions from the panel.
Great. Thanks. Okay, so this is the agenda. It's a little different than what I sent out last week. Added a few items, but basically it's pretty much the same as what was sent out. So first, probably up with most people's minds, and the system is reflecting that. It's been very busy since we went back into friendly user mode. So we started going back there. I'll talk about that briefly, but current status of the system. So we are in friendly user mode. We have 3,840 of the XK nodes up at the moment out of a total of 4,224. The torus, it's a full dimensional torus now, 24 by 24 by 24. We have a few nodes that are in the system that are designed to basically provide Geminis, but not no holes in the torus, but they're not designed to be running on for compute until we have all the available hardware to add the additional XK nodes into the system. What we've discussed over the past couple months, one of the primary impacts besides having a larger system is we've changed the XK node shape in the torus. So the original shape of the XK node in the torus was the Geminis were located on an 8x8x24 section of the torus. So that's X, Y, and Z dimensions. And that's been changed to a 15x6x24. And if you do the math, you'll find out that 15x6x24 provides more Geminis than what you would get needing for 4,224 XK nodes. And basically that's due to the fact that we relocated some IO nodes from outside in the XE region to move them into the XK region with the intent that that will hopefully in the future improve IO performance for XK applications. The change in the torus dimensionality was motivated by improving the aggregate bandwidth for applications on the system there. So we had the feeling that some of the applications were bandwidth limited and internet connect bandwidth limit, and this will improve that quite a bit. First, the obligatory view of the torus. This is viewing the torus using VMD to view it as a molecular system. And the nodes here are highlighted by color. There are XE nodes that are in blue. You can't really see them too well because I made the point size small so they don't obscure the rest of the Geminis in the torus there. So the XK, the Geminis that have XKs hanging off of them are in yellow, and you'll notice there at the bottom, four and top three up there, or four, can't really read it here, picture looks kind of bad. But that's the XK region, used to be 8 by 8 by 24, and now we've flattened it by 15 by 6 by 24. The orange highlighted Geminis are the LNET nodes. Those are the nodes that are responsible for routing your I.O. traffic from Lustre, from the compute nodes to the Lustre servers, so the OSSs. And you'll see that there are now some of them within the XK region. And they're reasonably uniformly distributed with some slight randomness to it. The MOM nodes are highlighted. They're in that back corner of the torus, even though there really isn't a corner in the torus. And we have a handful of other service nodes that are out there on the system that provide functionality for dynamic library support and several other functions. So just to give you a little picture, we're just going to rotate that torus around a bit. I didn't have time to do a nice VMD movie, so I just kind of did it by hand real quick with QuickTime. So as we rotate the torus around the Y dimension, you can begin to see the layout of the IO nodes with respect to the XK nodes in there and the MOM nodes and the other service nodes in that one back corner. And you can see roughly the somewhat uniform distribution of the LNET nodes throughout the torus. And the IO nodes are also relatively uniformly distributed through the XK region itself as well. And if you look closely, you'll see that some of the XK nodes are missing. They're not marked as yellow because they're still currently not fully populated with XK nodes at the moment. And once we get the rest of the XK nodes added to the system, those will be highlighted as part of the XK region. Okay, so besides adding extra hardware to the system, we have made some changes as well. So we've upgraded to the latest versions of Torque and Moab, so 4.2.4 and 7.2.4. And the motivation for that was to resolve some of the bugs that were bothering us over the last month or so when we might move to 4.2.3 and 7.2.3. Probably the largest one that we're happy with is the improved responsiveness of Moab and Torque under large job launch. So there were times, and many of you may have noticed, that when large jobs were launching or when large jobs were cleaning up, Torque would become unresponsive, and even Moab at times where you would wait several minutes for things to respond as opposed to tens of seconds now. So we're quite happy with full system job launch and cleanup, that the responsiveness of Torque and Moab is within a few tens of seconds. So we're quite pleased about that. We've also moved to a new version of the operating system on the compute node, CLE42UP01. And that has some added features as well. Primarily from the system administrative side, there have been some improvements to the node health check functionality. So when your jobs experience problems, either hardware or software, the ability to clean up after that has improved a bit as well. And some of the features provided by AppRun with respect to usage reporting have improved as well. So we're starting to work on documenting that. And for information regarding some of the software layer that's been updated behind the scenes, for CLE, if you have questions, you can always look at the publicly available documents on the Cray website for the release notes there. So if you have any questions, be sure to let me know at any time. So as we noted, we went into friendly user mode on Thursday, August 15th, and we're going to continue. Oops, I forgot to change that to August 24th. We're going to actually end friendly user at 6 a.m. instead of 7 a.m. Per a request from Cray to start a little earlier on Saturday morning. And as part of this friendly user period, we have a reduced charging factor. So for each queue, the charging factor has been scaled by a tenth the normal production value. And based on the utilization of the system, I think a lot of you are taking advantage of that reduced charging factor and quite happy with the system load, especially over the weekend. And today it's been quite high, up in the mid to high 90s, so we're quite happy about that. For those of you who are running earlier in the week, late into the weekend, Thursday, Friday, into Saturday, we did experience some substantial congestion protection events going on quite periodically, and we were working with Cray to identify the applications that might have been triggering the congestion protection in the first place and possible other issues or scenarios that could lead to this episodic congestion protection events that we experienced up until about Saturday at noon. And then since then, we haven't experienced any congestion protection events. So some of the points of contact and some of the members of the C staff here, we identified some of the likely candidates, likely applications, and emailed out some information on using ballast injection with your applications to certain research groups or teams, and hopefully that information has manifested itself into the job that people are submitting in the meantime, so we can understand which applications were possibly causing or triggering the congestion protection, and so we can start to work with those teams to identify where in their applications they were causing this kind of congestion. It's not really a quick process for us, though. Hopefully we don't see another episode where we got so many congestion protection events, because it does slow down the system a bit for a while. If you want to know information about what actually happens during a congestion protection event and how to mitigate that with balanced injection, we have a web page on the portal which discusses that that very aspect of the Cray high-speed network. So we're hopefully confident that we've identified some of the likely applications and won't see so many congestion protection events. Are there any questions about the friendly user period from people on the call? Nope. Right. Good. So one of the aspects that we discussed, at least in the email, about the friendly user period is a good opportunity to try out the July programming environment. So when we come out of our upcoming subsequent maintenance period that's coming up this weekend, we would like to move to the most recent programming environment. We try to change programming and default programming environments no more than 4 times a year. That's kind of our goal. And we feel that the changes that have happened since June, especially in the MPI library, really warrant moving to a more current programming environment as the default programming environment. So we sent out directions or instructions in the email about how to add the new environment to your system temporarily so that you can run your applications with the new programming environment and benefit from some of the new features that are available in the Cray MCC library especially. And basically, if you have statically linked applications, you don't need to do anything. You can continue to run with your application as is, even after the default programming environment has moved to the July one. But we feel that you may want to consider testing that out and seeing if there's any improvements. Dynamically linked applications, especially OpenACC and CUDA applications, you will need to do something to operate after that change has been made. So you will either need to rebuild your applications now against the June programming environment by making the changes by hand, or if you want to continue running with what you already have, you'll have to make changes to either your environment, either in your JavaScript or in your .modules file, to maintain the current modules that you have built with your application to make sure that binary loads the right libraries. So the major impact is primarily with dynamically linked applications. So below, and I included those in the email from a week ago about what the new features are for Cray MPitch. So they've adopted the new release from Argonne National Lab of MPitch 3.0. And within there, they've started enabling several MPI 3 features. So some of the non-blocking collectives and the old extension name with the X in the name, I think, is experimental. Those have been removed. Some of the features of RMA, remote memory addressing, are now available. Neighborhood collectives are available as well, and the mprobe and other functions. And there's some other lesser used things. In the MPI2, external 32 data types are also available. One thing that we are quite happy to see and that we've been working with Cray to resolve is improve performance of MPI all-to-all when running on large core counts, so over 300,000 cores. We worked with Cray to implement an alternative algorithm to get improved performance. And while I don't mention it here in the bullet, but if you look at the man page under the new Cray library, they will make claims that they see up to a 50-fold improvement in performance when running with message sizes between 8 bytes and 2 kilobytes on over 300,000 cores. So that's a substantial improvement to the MPI all-to-all performance. And so we're hoping that that's one good reason for users that use large-scale MPI all-to-all to make the change to the new version of the software stack. There is some, not complexity, but the choice of module names might be a little confusing, so we're actually, the default module name will move from Cray Impage 2, which is what it is now, to Cray Impage. So it's kind of more just the generic module name for the Cray MPT library, but it won't denote which release name of the MPI that it's based on. So it's not Cray Impage 3, it's just going to be Cray Impage. So hopefully that that simplification in the module naming by Cray won't cause any confusion about what implementation of MPage is actually enabled in that module.
Greg, are there any graphs showing the improvement in speed on MPI all-to-all?
Do we have any plots on that? We have some data points, and we're trying to reproduce some of that data. I don't believe we have generated any publicly available plots at this moment, but we can certainly try to make some available, Steve.
Thanks.
I'll just make a note of that. And we'll put those, once we get those available, we'll put those on the portal. Okay, are there any other questions about the transition to the July programming environment? Okay, there are a couple items. So our group here in the CS group have been actively testing with lots of different applications that we have access to and trying to see if we're having any functional or performance problems. And so far we've been pretty happy with what we've seen. We've only had to really report one issue, and it's a minor one with a known problem with the GNU 4.8 environment, where you're trying to link Fortran applications against the new version of the Cray MPage library, and you get some warnings. It doesn't seem to affect the application itself, and if you want to get rid of it, you can always build dynamically as well. So that's probably so far the only thing we've really come up with the new software environment. And just to give you an idea of all the modules, all these modules are not necessarily updated by the digital IDE, but these, if we make all these modules to be the most current version, this is the list of modules that will be moved to the new default values. And once we move that, we'll update the module page on the portal to reflect the new changes to which modules are default. So you can see it's pretty substantial change in default modules. Okay, so one of the items that users have been asking about and that the admins, the Blue Waters admins have been working with Cray and Adaptive a bit is coming up with some interim solutions to providing improvements to job consistency and performance by users being able to request node allocations of certain shapes, certain regions of the torus. And we've had some tests with some of the research, some of the PRAC teams on doing this, and we've been pretty happy with the results so far. So the admins have been working hard to develop a way within Moab and Torque to provide this as an interim solution while Adaptive is working on a more general solution to topology-aware scheduling. And so that's not a short time frame for that. So in the interim, we're trying to come up with a reasonably generic way to provide some of the same functionality. And so in the next few weeks, we're doing some internal testing pretty soon. And we just want to let people know that this is something that we're going to provide. And so at least for the PRAC teams, your points of contact will be probably sending out emails in the next week wanting to learn more about what are your typical node counts and node geometries that you think would be useful. And if you think, so far we've been seeing that basically XZ sheets, which have the highest aggregate network bandwidth, tend to be the best. But there might be some applications in which a more uniform XYZ layout, what we would call cuboid necessarily, would have better performance. And so there might be opportunities to do some testing on what would be the best shape in the torus. And we're trying to do this in a way where you don't actually specify a set of nodes, but you specify a shape, and we let Torque do the work of finding that set of nodes in the torus that satisfies your request. And so the admins here in the room have any comments they'd like to make about that?
I think that's it. We just want to make sure we solicit feedback and what the desired shapes and counts would be. That would be ideal. Because we won't be able to create one for every count, of course.
Right.
So we'll try and hit the large group targets.
Right. So the one thing to note, let's say, for example, so the dimensionalities of sheets would be some fraction of 24 by 24, the XZ, and then a certain number of Y sheet in Y. And those aren't going to be exactly the node count that you asked for, but what will be, you'll get some fraction or several parts of these kind of shapes, and the nodes that you don't use out of that feature will still be available for other users. So they're not necessarily dedicated shapes unless you happen to request all of the nodes in one shape, and then that would be yours. But so it doesn't necessarily make things to be exclusive to you or dedicated. It's just a way of providing a nice regular shape that you expect, as opposed to just the default or node allocations being provided by ALPS and Torque at the moment. So the question from one of the support team members was, what's the maximum node count that we're going to provide for this? And I don't know if that's been determined yet, but we routinely provide node counts of over 8,000 nodes. So I think that was a target size. I would think. It gets a little more complicated when you start asking for regions that start to be impacted by the presence of the XK nodes, for example. So there are some limitations based on topology, but we'll send out an email to the users asking for that kind of what kind of node sizes they expect and what we can provide support for. Any questions from people on the call? I can also just highlight the fact that the testing that we've done with applications that are all-to-all dependent, applications that push hard on MPI all-to-all, definitely do prefer or do best with node allocations that use large amounts of XZ and lesser amounts of in the Y dimension.
The other things we take into account as we construct these shapes is we go by a dimensional. There's non-uniform dimensional speed, so we have bias towards the faster dimensions first, and then we also apply a bias to not cross a half-dimensional boundary if not necessary, so that we don't have to wrap through other jobs. So use of these shapes, once they exist, can definitely have a benefit.
And as we go along, we'll make a page on the portal that'll document this. Okay, so some of the things that that were discussed as part of the review, Bill, some words here. So one thing we'd like to mention, I think we mentioned it prior as well, is that we're starting to look for participation by different groups on the system, allocated groups, to become members of our Blue Waters User Executive Advisory Committee. And we'll be sending out probably in the next week or two details on what that entails. And we'll start asking for recommendations, including self-nominations, for people who are interested in being part of our executive advisory committee. And all the different allocation bodies will have representation of one form or another, and it'll be kind of relative or proportional to the allocated size of each body on the system.
Sure. So I'll say a few more words. The first thing I'll say is we are looking for a better acronym than this one. So if you have any suggestions, please bring them up in terms of whatever titles we should use. But The project has had advisory committees since we started. They were put together, and we've had several different layers and levels, from executive advisory committees through specific groups for certain things like visualization. But as we move into a more sustaining steady state period, we are re-implementing the advisory concept for making sure the focus is on the people who are using our services, you all, and getting sufficient input and guidance for how we're doing and what we're doing. So this committee, and it is NSF and Irene Qualters are very supportive and interested in this committee, are targeted to make sure that there is a strong engagement between you all using the system and us. The size of the committee, we're looking at between 7 and 12 members. As Greg said, there'll be a couple areas, but the majority of the membership will come from the NSF science teams, the PRAC teams. So the other allocation groups will probably have one person or so representing them, but we're looking for at least an equal number, if not more, from the NSF community. In conjunction with discussing about how this would work in the roles and responsibilities of NSF, we're actually looking to have principal investigators or co-principal investigators engaged on this committee. And NSF will help us with recruiting if need be. So the process is we will request, you'll receive notification of requesting nominations or self-nominations, as Greg said, for membership on this group. We will look that over and work with NSF to select a reasonable size committee, but one that I think will provide us responsive input and oversight. It's being thought of as a two-year period. Could be renewable, but 2 years for people to serve, so that there's some continuity and some understanding. And we're looking at having people meet 3 to 4 times a year, if need be more, and if the group wants to meet more, that's fine. At least one of those meetings will be face-to-face with this, and look for the group to provide us guidance, but also to kind of do a report for us and NSF in terms of how well we're doing at least once a year. The responsibilities are to give us advice to help us focus on what the science and engineering teams need to succeed individually, but also across a group of a whole. Recommendations on and feedback on our technical directions, strategies, and how we're managing the system. How do we improve communication with our current and future S&E communities and the general public? Is another area that we'll look for guidance in, and also help and suggestions about how to make it easier to or solve problems for moving applications and system software at scale on Blue Waters, and how to provide the best possible performance to make sure that the science teams are meeting their objectives. So we will look forward to having a number of discussions with this group, and are looking to have it organized in the first part of the fall, so that we can actually possibly even have our first meeting by then. So I'm happy to answer questions on this now, and look forward to actually being asked to send us names and people that you think would be able to help us in this regard.
All right. Thanks, Bill. So we'll continue on. We'll, like Bill said, we'll be sending out email in the next week or two, so look out for that. So the other item that we revisit every meeting is the request for publications and presentations that people are, the research teams are working on. And this is important for us. As many of you know, we queried everyone before the review so that we could update NSF with what's going on, what your teams have been working on, what publications are coming down the pipeline, instead of having to wait until things are actually published and then getting notified either in an annual report or by some other mechanism. So we're trying to improve the responsiveness for that, and we're trying to not make it too intrusive from our point of view, so that, or your point of view, that we don't bother you all the time regarding that. So we're trying to come up with a simpler mechanism for that. And for the PRAC teams, we will be working with your points of contact to develop a better way for being informed and keeping track of what's going on, where you are with respect to the status of your work and publications and presentations. And that was definitely an item that was brought up by the review panel, being able to monitor and report not only what you've been doing, but also what we've been doing to help you do your work on Blue Waters. So that's where we are. That's an important one, and I know we revisit it every time, but feel that, and NSF has also reiterated that this is an important aspect of this project, especially the visibility and knowing what's going on with the work on Blue Waters. All right, so moving on, if there are any questions there, the upcoming events, so like we mentioned several times, there is a additional shorter duration maintenance outage coming up this weekend, starting 6 a.m. August 24th, and it'll persist until sometime Tuesday the 27th. And we're doing some additional work to complete the XK upgrade, and we anticipate to have that completed sometime on Tuesday. And as usual, we try to maintain as much access to the system as possible. So at the moment, there aren't any reasons why the login node, the file system, and the HPFS nearline will be available for that duration. I don't think there's any reason why it'll go away. And if it does need to go away, we will certainly give you as much early warning as possible. So the other thing's coming up, the next Blue Waters user webinar will be September 16th, Monday the 16th, and I've been working with Professor Wen-Mei Hu on getting someone from NVIDIA to give a half-hour webinar on advanced Kepler features. So I've heard from some teams that while they're happy with the Kepler performance, they are not seeing the same fraction of peak performance that they are with their code that they developed on Fermi. So we're hoping to bring up some information on some of the advanced features that might require some changes to users' CUDA code or things to look out for with respect to OpenACC in a brief half-hour webinar. So that's what's coming up in the immediate time frame for that. So I hope that'll draw in a larger crowd. And the next thing that we're working on is the next Blue Waters workshop, which we tentatively look like will happen in early December. So we're trying to narrow down the dates for availability for rooms and hotel rooms and presenters, and we're trying to come up with some interesting and new topics to present as well for that. So just to give you a heads up on that.
Oh, one thing on the maintenance outage. After the machine comes back in service, I think that there'll be a continued friendly user period for a few days, but probably around September 1st, it will go back into standard charging. So based on what we experience and where things are, that would be something to pay attention to.
Okay. All right, and so the other thing we'd like to emphasize coming up in the next couple months is a Parallel Tools Eclipse User Developer Workshop that's coming up September 13th and 14th, and Jay Alameda's here. He's our Eclipse evangelist, and would like to just advertise a bit the upcoming workshop up near O'Hare, actually.
So I'd just like to comment that we have it's a two-day workshop. The first day is focused on user experience, and especially if you've been able to use Eclipse in ways to help with your science. We're very interested in knowing about that. And also, if you have some things that with Eclipse you would like to see improved, we'd also very much like to know about that. The second day is more of a developer workshop where we can go and dive into what we've learned from our user community. We do have some travel support that would help you consider attending. We're also soliciting topics for to build our agenda out. If you would like to present at the meeting, you can write a short abstract and submit that with your registration. I hope we can see a number of our user community out at our workshop in next month.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jay. We're always happy, and we've been very supportive of the Eclipse environment here at Blue Waters, so we'd like to see members of the Blue Waters user community participate and show your support for Eclipse and the future of Eclipse. And as usual, we're always looking for additional topics and subject matters for future teleconferences and webinars. I can say that we've had one request for some improvement, best practices, best use cases for use of our HPSS system, either within Blue Waters or to remote sites. So that might be one of the topics for October. But if you have other items that you'd like to bring up, if you want to see something about visualization services or maybe something else, be sure and send me a note. That would be great. We're always looking for topics that people want to hear about as opposed to just topics being forced upon you guys. And that's about all I have, so that's the end of the call, at least the material that we have presented. And if you have any input that you'd like to raise or any questions you'd like to raise right now, that'd be great. So please raise them on the phone if you can. And if not, if there aren't any, then thanks for joining and welcome back from summer vacation. Doesn't sound like there's anyone on the call. Let me just toggle. I mean, anyone who has a question, and it looks like there aren't any questions remotely either through the web interface either. Oh, no, there might be one. Hold on. Oh, someone had connected up but didn't realize they needed to dial in as well. Okay. All right. Well, if there are any other questions, thanks for calling in, and we look forward to the next Blue Waters user call next month, and hopefully NVIDIA will give us a good presentation on the advanced features of the Kepler GPU. All right. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Bye.